Hi, middle-aged gamers. Welcome back to another late Wednesday morning, Tuesday evening episode of the Middle-Aged Gaming Podcast. We have been beset by multiple technical issues today, but we're here. We're going to be telling you news and stories. Let us know what you think about the quality today, and if you miss Adam's high-definition face as we go back down to standard definition plus. But no, let's get started with stories, and let's go with has to be the hottest story of the last 3 to 4 weeks, which is everything to do with Baldur's Gate, and Antoine's going to lead us off with that story.
All right. To be honest, I don't even realize when Baldur's Gate 3 went out. Like Adam, the plan was not to play Baldur's Gate 3 because very soon, in the next couple of weeks, there's Armor Core and Starfield. And Baldur's Gate, if you played the previous one, or if you play, what is it, like Divinity
Original Sin 1 and 2.
Yeah, exactly. It's at the same studio who made it. You spend hours in there and you just can't not play this kind of game. So the point was not to play this. And unfortunately, I think I'm going to be drawn to it simply because me not buying game on day one, never ever, you know me. And yet, Baldur's Gate 3 has an extraordinary launch with nearly no bugs. A very good launch. And so Lion Studio has done an extremely good work on their early access. It has been in early access for quite a while. And it worked because the launch has been great. And apparently, it's a Divinity Original Sin 2. So there's a lot of comparison with their previous game, which was already like a GOTY contender. Maybe again a Game of the Year, I can't remember. But apparently Baldur's Gate 3 blew it out of the water. And the reason being, you all seen the instruction with a mind flayer on his boat getting attacked, kidnapping people, putting some kind of little worm in their brain. Can't remember what the name exactly is, but the point is this: if it stays long enough in your brain, you become a mind flayer. It's not really a good thing, right? The intro is being attacked by the Dragon Riders. Can't remember the name again, but that's Dungeon and Dragon fan will help me there. Not destroy, but incapacitate the ship. You go down, you get freed. And once you are out of the ship of the Mind Flayer, you do whatever you want. Apparently, the freedom is really true to the spirit of a tabletop game. Once a dice, there's no GM to say that, no, I didn't do the map of this, so please don't go to this region. You can really do whatever you want. So apparently the writing is great. The combat system is really engaging. The two things which come out and much better than Divinity is that there's much more depth in the setting and that there's personal character stories are much more developed. So you're going to spend hundreds of thousands of hours in this one. And Eric, which you have seen last year on this show, asked me to get the game so that we could very likely, if I understand how to stream again, because it has been a while, we'll stream on the show. So if you want to see what it looks like, because you don't have the platform to play it, and if you really want to see the stream, you are very welcome to come and see us. But it's a good.
Oh, yes. But Antoine, did you see the downside of that? Is that like when you and Eric start playing together, right? He'll have to have a single player and a multiplayer instance, because if you're not playing, there's something to do with characters and stuff you lose something, because so if you are joining his single player instance, it becomes multiplayer forever. And when you're not playing, he won't be able to make the same progress as single player.
Okay,
so I think that's one of the things Larian was criticized of, but they said this is the way they wanted to make the game, so that multiplayer is multiplayer only. So basically they said if you want to play by yourself, you have to play by yourself. And if you want to play multiplayer, it's multiplayer only. There's no, okay, Antoine's not here, I'm going to make some more progress, and then next time Antoine joins, he can continue.
No, I agree. That's not a very good. Much prefer the Diablo thing where Phil could progress far away from me when I wasn't there, because he played it much more than me. That wouldn't be fair for him to be stuck waiting for me.
Yeah, so it's just basically a lot of people didn't know it when the game launched and they were like playing with their friends, and then when they were trying to play, when their friends were not there, they couldn't play and they lost out because of that, it's fine. I totally understand. It just means like, at least you know now you need a single player game and a multiplayer game, which make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Not much sense, no. But
yeah. I'll add on to something like, when I was preparing for the show, Baldur's Gate is number 2 on the Steam charts at the moment, as of Tuesday at Taiwan time. So 900,000 active players. This would have been Tuesday afternoon. So roughly like less than 24 hours ago. That just talks about success.
Yeah, so some of my friends who's already like 25 hours player. How? Because they're not working. But the one with this playtime are not working, and I don't think they slept yet.
Yeah, I saw this morning they said your average Baldur's Gate player plays 5 hours a day.
Damn.
So people are averaging 5 hours a day.
Are they working or are they sleeping?
I have no idea.
You have to do compromise, right?
Yeah. But as far as the multiplayer thing, I get it, because having played Divinity Original Sin 2 with my friends, if you play, what we would do, for example, is we could have, I don't know if he could do it single player, but we could have somebody come in and like his brother could drop in and whatnot. But if like I create a character, my friends create their own characters, if he was playing offline, he would be playing with our characters, meaning he would be leveling up our characters. He would be making decisions for our characters, which somebody goes and they make progress and you hop back in. It's you might not necessarily agree with the direction they've taken that person in. So it's probably a safety thing saying if you're playing Dungeons, it'd be like if you're playing Dungeons and Dragons with friends and then you have a session and one friend's not there and it's okay, I'll play for him and I'll play his character and I'll level his character and I'll put in his feats or whatever. And then he comes back and he's like, that's not how I wanted to build. And so I think it's just, I think in their mind, they were trying to avoid that. And that's why they made the decision they did.
Do you think it's a big return of tabletop game? Because not too long ago, you had the Dungeon & Dragon Honor Among Thieves in cinema, which was actually really good. And now you have this new Dungeon & Dragon game, so Baldur's Gate. Just in case you don't recall, Baldur's Gate is a place in the universe of Dungeon & Dragon, which is mentioned in the movie, by the way. You have plenty of software now, which allows you to play from a distance, just like this, playing with your friend. So is it a new era for this type of game, which Dungeons & Dragons has always been popular, right? But unless you have time to go, because it's very time consuming, and people can't progress if you're not here. So that's tough. Oh, there's a Quebec movie actually called Farador. If you like tabletop game or Dungeons & Dragons movie, this is a kind of a critique. It's a very funny movie that you should try. Yeah, agree, Noble Cooper. It goes for several years, depends on the seasons and everything. And in Farador, or the Quebec movie, they have been 18 years trying to reach the castle of Farador. Yeah, they start playing, they're in college, and they're in the adult life meeting every Thursday to continue the game.
Yeah, how does that work? You'd think, because D&D doesn't have a super high level cap, so you think they'd reach it relatively early, and then it's kind of like no more growth. Now it's just the roleplay.
Yeah, in the movies, they're not playing D&D. They're playing Farador, which I don't think is a real game. But yeah, they're saying, yeah, I'm a paladin level 62. The other is like, basically, they're invincible after 18 years of getting XP.
Cool. Adam, what's your first story for today?
My first story is on the From Software Japanese Twitter. They posted that they have just dropped the specs for Steam. So if you are going to be downloading Armored Core 6, I'm having a brain fart here. If you're going to be downloading Armored Core 6 on your PC, we now have the recommended specs. But something to keep in mind, the actual recommended specs are actually not that high. My personal PC, which is 7 years old, actually could probably run it. However, if you want to run ray tracing, you're going to have quite a bit higher specs just to get that going. But if I were to recommend whether you should do ray tracing or not, I would say don't aim for ray tracing, because apparently that is only available in the garage, not in the actual game itself. So basically, when you're building your mech, you can look at ray tracing and it's okay, I can see my mech in all of its beauty. But then when you go out and play, there's no ray tracing in the game. It's only in that build mode. So for me, if I was going to be going for it, I would say, you know what, forget the ray tracing, just focus on the gameplay and go for the regular specs. But yeah, it can run on pretty much older graphics card. The recommended settings for non-ray tracing is even the NVIDIA, the 1060, which is what I use, which is really old. So yeah, you shouldn't have any problem running this game. And apparently I've heard people saying they're using the same engine they used on the PS3, so that might be why. But yeah.
Oh no.
Oh, that's like,
but it does look good. So yeah, I don't know.
That's not good news. But I'll let you talk first, Antoine.
Yes, I agree with the fact that every game should be cyberpunked and super nice at the latest edge of technology. But let's be realistic now. Not everyone has $5,000 to spend on the brand new computers. And that's why also you have a lot of people still on Warcraft and the WoW Classic, because everybody can run it. So I can understand the lower specs just so that your game can sell more. After, of course, it would be nicer if it looks like Elden Ring and it's absolutely beautiful, but I don't know, is it released on, it's released on console, is it?
Yeah, it's coming to console, it's coming to PC, so it'll be on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation.
So on Xbox and PlayStation, it's going to be absolutely beautiful. So on PC,
I would assume so.
On PC, you can have lower expectation.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing about frame rates and all that, but like, for example, let me see if I can pause
plus,
this.
If you have if you have good gear, I'm sure you can play it in epic or super high quality, while Adam would play it in a low resolution or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's still an old engine, PS3. That's freaking ridiculous. Come on.
That's what people say. I don't know if that's actually people just commenting, because they were saying, like, for instance, Elden Ring was using a really old engine as well.
It looked good.
But yeah, so the minimum specs for ray tracing, the minimum specs for no ray tracing. For a processor, you need an Intel Core i7-7700.
Tell me to the recommended specs. That tells a lot more than the minimum specs.
The recommended specs? For no ray tracing... Oh, sorry. For no ray tracing, you want... Let's see. Intel Core i7-7700 or an Intel Core i5-10400 or AMD Ryzen 7-2700X, AMD Ryzen 5-3600. For graphics cards, NVIDIA GeForce GTX 1060, 6 GB, or AMD Radeon RX 590, 8 GB, or Intel Arc A750, 8 GB.
Damn, that's terrible.
Those are the recommended specs for no ray tracing.
Oh, God.
And with ray tracing, that just... all of a sudden, you need the 30 series at least.
And the recommended for with ray tracing, you have basically the same... processors, but you would want an NVIDIA GeForce GTX 2070 8 GB or an AMD Radeon RX 6650 XT 8 GB or Intel Arc A770 16 GB.
Yeah, so a 3-5 years old computer could run it with ray tracing.
That's recommended with ray tracing.
I mean,
and you're only
going to
get ray tracing in the garage.
the textures and all of that are going to be like, it's just not going to have all the modern things you would expect from a modern engine that you'd get with Unreal 5 or something. And to Antoine's point about saying, like, a modern engines can still allow you to optimize, right? Like, you mentioned Elden Ring and Elden Ring Steam specs. And yeah, Elden Ring, what engine is Elden Ring? Anyway.
Yeah, Nova Cooper's saying, low-end PC spec modders are real heroes.
That they are.
Okay.
Getting it to run on our potatoes.
Indeed. All right. Yeah, no, I'll drop it. That to me was like, I was excited about Armored Core, and now I'm like less excited. I don't want to play a PS3.
Why? The gameplay is exactly the same.
I mean, it is, but for that kind of game, like a mech game, right? I want it to be like a Mech Warrior 5, which is Unreal Engine 4, or something like that. It looks good. If it's like a pixel game, cool. I don't care. No problem. But for someone entering the Armored Core franchise who has a nice PC, I want it to look good. Why am I buying $60 for a game when it's a PS3 engine?
looks good to me.
And don't be like, I've seen the trailers and they do look good, but I'm just, no. I'm going.
I guess we will.
I'll wait for you to play it.
Oh, you're waiting for me to play your video?
No, I'm waiting for you to play Armored Core 6.
Oh. Okay, because I just played your video.
Oh, God. Oh, yes. Okay. So my first story is about blockchain gaming, because apparently people are interested in it. So if you guys don't know, I've been playing a blockchain game called Sunflower Land. It's very much Stardew Valley. We've talked about this on the show maybe 2 or 3 times so far. And it's made by a bunch of guys in Australia, really cool, really smart guys. And they have some other team members around the world, but mostly it's an Australian crew. Basically, you're a farmer and you start on the land and you're growing crops. And as you're growing crops, you're getting money. And it's, I guess, in-game money that you can convert to real money in real life pretty easily. And that's basically it. You're just growing crops. You're harvesting eggs from your chickens. And I guess the biggest thing that they've just done, which I didn't think they'd actually do, is they've made this like a multiplayer online farming game, almost similar to Pillion in a sense, like a multiplayer Stardew Valley, where you can join a common area and you can go talk to people and you can go do stuff. And it's really, to me, it's really interesting because it shows the power of, as people are paying money, you can have a small community. Like, I think the most I've ever seen online has been like 11,000 people online. And with 11,000 people, they're able to pay a team 20 people's salaries plus marketing expenses, plus hardware, plus a bunch of other stuff, and able to keep growing this game into something. And it's, to me, that's really impressive. And it's come really far. And one of the things I wanted to mention, right, is like, okay, blockchain gaming, oh my God, you're paying X amount of money per month. I pay, how much do I pay? 1, 2, 3. I pay 5 cents a month to play this game. US cents, right? Wow, oh my God, Korean, that's a lot of money. Are you crazy? Yes, I am crazy, 5 cents. But no, yeah, that's it. And that's all. And I pay 5 cents to sync my information to the blockchain. That's it. And I play and it's fun. And it's very much a game of, why I like these games is it's economies of scale, saying, okay, I have 37 plots to plant crops. This is how much money I'm making. This is how much money I'm selling it for. This is the profit margin on this and this. And it's like running a fake business in real life, I guess. And then the cool thing here with this as well is that what happens a lot in Asia that Western gamers don't really like, but this does it in a safer way, is that, okay, I'm done playing this game. I get to sell my game or my land that I've spent all this time building for thousands of dollars, right? I have a friend who plays this game, not plays this game. It's the game Lineage 2, most people are familiar with. Not most, some people. That dude played Lineage twice. He sold two accounts for $2,000 here in Taiwan, and people will pay that money because he's leveled up his character. And I think that's something. And I even saw, like, this is the big differentiator that's happening at the moment is in Asia, people are moving towards this model that actually has existed before, but now it's becoming more official with the blockchain, with that sort of stuff. And I just wanted to highlight it because, yeah, if you're looking for a blockchain game, it is really cheap. It's not like what you might see about paying $20, $30. Are you waiting 5-10 minutes for a transaction to finish? It takes you less than 30 seconds for a transaction, and you get to try it a new game. And potentially, if you do get tired of it, you get to resell your game if you want to at some point and make more than what you paid for it or get your money back. But yeah, that's it.
Can you just re-explain for people like me who are not really familiar with this concept, what are blockchain games?
So blockchain games are games that are built on a distributed ledger, which is just, how else do you explain distributed ledger? It's just the information is not all stored in one place, basically. And so when my information, my games, my things, my crops, my animals are all stored on the blockchain in little bits of data that's distributed between people around the world, people who run machines, like I have one of those in the corner over there, and they process transactions and they earn money from processing transactions. And they maintain the security as well, because the advantage of this game is that if one day I decide, hey, I don't want to be part of this system anymore, I'm shutting it down, the server for the game doesn't shut down because there are thousands of other people out there running their own nodes. So this game can continue in perpetuity as long as there's something running a large network. And again, because it is distributed, because I don't know John in Korea and John doesn't know Tom in Iceland, one person dropping or 100 people dropping or 1,000 people dropping doesn't impact the network. That's the advantage of a blockchain.
So no need for big data centers with big servers to stock everything. All right.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Cool. Okay. Then as we speed along, let's go on to Antoine's second story.
All right. So there's going to be a quick story on Mortal Kombat 1, because you must have seen that now. Mortal Kombat 1, which is going to come out very soon. But first of all, you have a pre-order beta this weekend, I think, yeah, 18 to 21 of August. And to access this beta, of course, you need to pre-order the game on Xbox and PS5. So at this very moment, you can download the game on Xbox. You can't do it in PS5 yet. But even if you pre-install it, same as Diablo, it will open on the 18. So that will be a nice little bit of a tryout for you if you pre-ordered the game. You have 6 playable characters with 4 cameos. So the characters are Sub-Zero, Kenshi, Kitana as cameo. Then you have Frost, Sonya, Kano, and Jax. So the cameo are the characters which goes in the back, help you make combos, but I don't believe you can play them. So why not? So yeah, that's basically the news. Mortal Kombat 1 coming out, and less than a month, right after Street Fighter 6. So we'll see how they compare. But that's definitely going to be interesting, because there are different styles, but they're still combat game. With Tekken 8, I think, coming out sometime before the end of the year. So really, the fighting game, it's RPG and fighting game this year. All of it. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Fun ninja boy band.
Yeah.